Greetings, film freaks. We are the Podcorn Kernels. Join us as we discuss the hard and often indigestible truths that are at the center of the fluffy and delicious world of cinema.
What's poppin', people? Welcome to the Podcorn Kernels podcast. My name is Adam, and joining me in your ear holes is Harry. Say hello, Harry.
What's the difference between Daniel Day-Lewis and God? One of them's believable.
On today's episode, we will be talking about Surge. This is a 2020 film directed by Anil Kariya and stars Ben Whishaw, Ellie Haddington and Jasmine Jobson. IMDb describes the synopsis as follows. Set over 24 hours in London, a man goes on a bold and reckless journey of self-liberation. Here is an original song to support the synopsis. You want to push me to the end of my limit. You like to mock me and say I'm not with it. But I'm just a man trying to get by. Don't know who I am or how to survive. The ticket to my mind is plain and it's simple. Just be kind, treat all men as equal. So here I am, so close to the line. I'm okay, I lie that I'm fine. All I need is one tender touch. I have myself, but that's not enough. I have myself, but that's not enough. Always quiet, always ignored. I'm just like you, a human with flaws. I want to speak, but I have no voice. I want to be normal, but I don't have a choice. I'm not smart, I'm sure not simple. Just be kind, treat all men as equal. I'm not unique, I blend into crowds. I am silent when others are loud. A beige stone in a sea that glitters. I'm only here because I'm not a quitter. I'm only here because I'm not a quitter. Let's start with some facts about the film. Surge has no trivia available on its IMDb page. This is the first time this has happened on an episode of the Popcorn Kernels podcast, and I was unsure what to do about this.
Wow.
Yeah. Mad that a film that was out 3 years ago, I couldn't find any nuggets of factual information about it.
Who populates the trivia? Is it just general public, like Wikipedia, or is it film critics, or do IMDb have a responsibility?
I think it's they. So you know when people go, oh, they say that if you do this, it means this.
They.
I think
who
it's
are
just they.
Okay.
Just them. They're responsible, and they've missed out here. They've given me nothing to work with.
I think the film gives me all the trivia I need, though.
Yeah?
Yeah. I feel like it's a short filmmaker's got a very simple idea, simple vision, a very back to basics filmmaking, and with a strong lead, and it's just meant like a mental breakdown. I can't imagine what trivia comes of it. Like if it said like Ben Whishaw rubbed himself in peanut butter for 2 months to get into the mindset of
Joseph,
I'd be like, that's interesting but irrelevant.
I would love a fact like that.
I know you would. You love them facts.
I do. Yeah. But regardless, I've got two more facts if you're interested. Surge has a rating of 6.1 on IMDb, 79% on Rotten Tomatoes, and 3.2 on Letterboxd. Without giving anything away of your personal score, you think that's harsh, fair, generous?
It will be a part of my dislike. I could explain it better within my dislike, but what I would say is that it's more two-part TV drama than it is film. So
Okay. Potentially
around that 6-7 mark, I think is probably fair.
Mm.
But it definitely deserves credit in certain areas.
Yeah, I mean, as I grow older, as I watch more films, as I sort of read into what these websites score things, it's like critics, it's opinion, it's subjective, isn't it? Mm. And the older I get, I see some ratings of some films and I'm like, how on earth is that high?
Mm.
And equally, how on earth is that low? Now, I think it's fair to say straight off the bat before we go into it, this is on paper, more my sort of film. Mm. So I tend to think that 6.1 rating on IMDb may be a little low, but I can understand a film like this, how it would divide opinion.
Yeah, I think so. It's harder to sell like a really sort of gritty British London-based drama with a really small budget. You know, I think it only box office at $30,000.
Yeah, I saw that and was like, that's mad.
Mm. But it's a cult film. It's a film that wasn't marketed or designed to make millions, and it probably never will.
Yeah, it's certainly for more of your sort of cinephiles, or someone that likes their independent film, or likes to have a deep dive into sort of the human psyche, the condition, what a fractured mind can look like and what it can do to a person.
It's a showcase for Ben Whishaw's talent.
Definitely.
I mean, that's a showreel. If I ever wanted to cast someone that had like a mental breakdown and I got sent a tape of Whishaw, I'd be like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah, call
give
him.
Give that sugar some money.
Yeah, pick up Paddington. He knows how to do it, right?
Oh, Marmaladian.
Final fact, I watched this film on BBC iPlayer with my partner on a Saturday evening with a cup of hot chocolate.
Ooh.
The beverage was in a glass cup and certain scenes made this very uncomfortable.
Because you wanted to bite the glass and pop one of your teeth out.
So for context, in the film, Joseph is a man on the edge. He's had enough and he's staring into the abyss of madness. And within the film, he sort of starts to lose it, doesn't he? He's got a glass, he starts biting down on it and pushes it a bit too far so that it breaks off.
It's one of his tics, isn't it?
Yeah, I couldn't help, while drinking this delicious hot chocolate, I couldn't help but sort of bite the glass. I did stop myself because I was like, how pathetic would it be that I'm watching this film and I mirror it just because I see it and I bite the glass and make my mouth bleed and spit up a load of blood. It'd be too much, right?
Yeah, he made that a very believable tick of his. Like, when he was doing it, I wasn't like, oh, it looks like it's been written in script. It looks like something he just wanted to, like, he did it justice. And I really, unlike you, I kind of like wanted to bite a glass after.
Yeah.
I just wanted to go, oh.
The thing is, I started biting the glass because I'm an impressionable simple boy.
Mm.
So I started to bite it and I was like, I wonder how much more force I would need to do to go full Joseph and to break that glass.
Ooh.
Thankfully, I kept all those thoughts in my head and didn't say to my partner, I'm going to try and break this glass full of hot liquid in my mouth because I'm seeing it on a film.
That's that whole like having a brand new phone low, isn't it? And wanting to throw it into the ocean.
Yeah.
It's weird. You there's a part of you that's like, oh, I just want to do it. And it's because you all of a sudden you don't want to fit anymore. You want to be like, fuck it, I'm just going to do what I want. That's all this film really is. It's like, I can't fit in this world anymore.
It is that, isn't it?
I am a fork in a world of soup.
Oh.
Noel Gallagher.
Yeah, I like that.
Mm.
What did you like about Surge?
Whishaw's descent into madness is sickeningly sad, realistic and depressing. But it is some of the finest acting I've seen in years.
Yeah.
It's just great. He totally encompasses the role of Joseph. And it's really horrible. Like, I found the first 25 minutes really difficult to watch because it's very depressing. You know, he lives in this rat race life.
Yeah.
Stansted Airport. It captures England at its worst perfectly. It's very, very depressing. I was glad to move into the crazy part.
Yes.
I was glad to see him break from his mundane routine.
His
the most depressing birthday I've ever seen with his mum and dad.
It's gut-wrenching, isn't it?
Just so depressing. And it breaks because he bites the glass, like you were referring to before, and then everything changes. From when he bites the glass and blood comes out, he realises he's opened the door to all the thoughts he's been having.
As the catalyst, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, we don't know the catalyst as to why he's got to this point.
Yeah.
Like, you don't... I mean, I could only imagine a couple of failed relationships, not a very loving dad.
Yeah.
Very Freudian in that regard. And he's just broke. He's just snapped. But him developing his character from on the brink to in the brink to well over the brink is amazing.
It's that evolution, isn't it?
But it's like Joker.
Yeah.
It's really similar. Like, he could have smashed Joker. I never thought anyone could have done a better job than Joaquin Phoenix, but I look at Whishaw and I'm like, he would have done a mega Joker.
And it's that, isn't it? It's such a relatively short film at 90 minutes. The start of the film, you can tell he's repressing all sorts of emotion. You can tell that under the surface, he's angry, he's agitated, he's frustrated, he's fed up, he's all these things.
Mm.
And it is like a ticking time bomb. You're just watching this, and like you, that first 25 minutes is so much harder to stomach than when he is free from them restraints, because you're like, number one, you can relate to that, feeling like you're stuck in a dead-end job, small talk with people you don't really like, that monotonous day-to-day, just repetitiveness is going to take its toll on everyone. And number two, just trying to sort of keep those thoughts, those feelings under the surface rather than letting it boil over and act on it and completely lose your head, which is what Joseph does.
I think it's really unnatural. And I think since the whole lockdown and pandemic, it's really unnatural to contain your feelings. And it's really bad for you. I think it can lead to actually really bad mental health issues.
Yeah.
If you can't fight and you can't flight and you have to just suffer.
Yeah.
You're killing yourself slowly. You'll do it either through overeating, drinking, smoking, whatever. And in this, he's quite level-headed. He doesn't really have a drink. He doesn't have drugs. He gets up, he goes to work. He's professional enough to maintain a normal life. But it's just, it's so mundane. And the things that annoy him annoy me.
Yeah.
Some prick revving his bike outside a flat for no reason.
It's just inconsiderate, isn't it?
Yeah. For everything in it. The way he needs to strip search a guy, because he's basically, he's airport security, isn't he? He does the baggage check and he scans people for metal objects and stuff. And he gets this one really like meek, nervous guy at the start who doesn't speak a lot of English. And he's all like, oh, please, please, please. And it's just like over the top sort of desperate person. And he's trying to help him, trying to get it over and done with. And the guy elbows him by accident in the face. And I was just like, oh,
yeah,
I was angry for him. Everything's pissing him off in it, and it was pissing me off. And yeah, I was really annoyed in the first 20 minutes.
Yeah, and you can, as a character, you can see that it's bubbling. You can see it as all the noise surrounding him, the difficult people that he's dealing with. You can see that under the surface, he's ready to unleash hell. Like, he is so close to tipping point. And the saddest thing about all of that is, it's his routine is the only thing that's keeping him going. He's boring, monotonous routine is like the armbands that are keeping him afloat. And that's tragic. Like you said, he's got nothing else. He doesn't seem to have any friends. He's not doing this repetitive job for anything other to go back and continue to do that job, to live a lonely existence, to have a family that are really shut off and unresponsive.
What's the point in doing any of it if you're not going to enjoy the result of the job? Like, if you're not going to be able to go away, if you're not going to be able to have some hobbies, some interests, there's no point in doing 9 to 5.
Exactly.
No point working.
It's exactly that. He's not in a career. He's not pursuing something he's passionate about.
No.
He's doing it to keep his head above water. Mm-hmm. And as a result, he's barely keeping afloat because it's just all getting to him.
Got to have your hobbies.
You have to have your hobbies.
Got to have your hobbies.
And I'll jump in the bath with you on that one, because I think the man himself, Ben Whishaw, is probably the greatest selling point for Surge.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly didn't know he had this sort of performance in him. Now, I'm used to seeing him in more innocent, pleasant roles, but he smashed it as this troubled character on the very edge of sanity. Imagine Paddington on crack during a panic attack and you've got Joseph from Surge. Because the way he speaks, he's very, very well spoken, very softly spoken. And he's not a physically threatening presence. He's quite a slight man. But when he does finally go over the edge, to see someone that looks so unthreatening, so sort of friendly and approachable, to see someone snap and be a genuine menace while looking like that frail figure, it takes a real act of class, like you said. So I think he's superb in it.
I think I'd always be quite weary of someone like Whishaw, the way he holds himself in this film. Like, the way he plays nuts is so real. Like, if you've ever been to London or some of the outlying areas of London, every city on earth's got its crazy person. The pig faced woman of Manchester Square, Jesus of Reigate. There's a million names given, nom de guerre given to people.
Yeah, there's
monikers.
There's the sinner woman in Epsom.
Yeah.
Used to shout, stand outside a betting shop and just shout.
Yes, there's this souped up neon granddad chav. A chav's like a bogan in Australia. What's it in America?
Chad? No.
Chad.
Redneck?
No, I don't know, actually.
Maybe chavs are exclusive.
I don't know what the chav is. Jersey. New Jersey people. Jersey Shore people.
If you are listening, Jersey.
No, Jersey Shore people, the program Jersey Shore.
Oh, then yeah, I don't care about that.
Yeah, essentially, he dresses up like that and he's just one of them madmen. But when you see him, he's done that perfectly.
Mm.
When you see a nutty person on a train or a bus and people start to move away from him because he's just making weird noises and making movements, you think within minutes he's going to pull a knife and neck six people.
Yeah.
He played it brilliantly.
Yeah. It's that believability in his performance that makes a film handled, that if it was handled by a lesser actor, you'd be laughing at it. Mm-hmm. It could be like you say, like the Joker route, where it's comic book, so there's elements of believability in it. Mm-hmm. But in the grand scheme of things, it is quite unrealistic. This is so impactful because you, like you say, you can see these people, you know these people. Mm-hmm. The shifty person on the train, the bloke standing at the bus stop sort of shaking his head and muttering under his breath, those people are a result of something. Something's made them like that. And that is terrifying when you think about it. They're out there.
And it's one of the last character acting sort of parts that is it can never be done for Taboo. It can never be, you shouldn't have done that part.
Yeah.
Because you see him start the role. You can't replicate mental breakdown. You can't find someone that he's having a mental breakdown, go, do you want to be in a film real quick?
Yeah, yeah.
You can't do it.
Can't do that to
so
that person.
So it's the one of the last character acting parts that you can get, where a character can go and be an eccentric, over-the-top, crazy sort of person, because it's a mental breakdown.
And in terms of artistic license, you'll always be able to explore it, because everyone's only a tragedy or a trauma away from that break.
And everyone's break's different.
Exactly. Mm. And the result of the break's different. One person might become a complete recluse, never set foot outside of their house again.
One might straddle a banana.
One might start just windmilling in the street while
clucking,
singing Bohemian Rhapsody. You just don't know where it's going to go. You just don't. What else did you like about Surge?
Guerrilla filmmaking. Boom. It's claustrophobic. Zero wide shots. Did you notice? There's never a wide shot in that whole film.
I didn't notice that.
All boxed off.
Very claustrophobic. It was kind of almost like make you think it's like a single shot. You're just following someone on their descent into madness. I didn't notice the wide shots.
No wide shots at all. Gritty, on the streets. It doesn't capture London and the whole rat race conveyor belt life. It is London and the rat race conveyor belt life. Yeah. It captures it excellently. And there's this one sequence in it, which I might have to watch a bit closer to confirm, but it did feel like a single shot sequence, like the start of 1917, where essentially he's left work. He comes out of a tube station. He goes to his colleague's house because he obviously fancies her. He wants to impress her. He heard by over listening to a conversation at work that her TV's not working. He's turned up. He's like, I'll come to fix your TV. She's off ill. Anyway, the sequence starts with him saying, I'll come to fix your TV. He gets upstairs. He goes, okay, where's the wire? He's animated. He's like, I'll go buy your wire. And from the sequence, he goes down the street, goes into a shop, gets the wire. His card doesn't work. Then he goes along to a shop to cash me. The machine eats his card. Then he goes to a bank, says, oh, I need to get some money out. He doesn't have the proper ID. She goes to get online banking. He leaves the thing and he's like, oh, I'm trying to impress this girl. I can't impress this girl. Then he goes back in the bank and he starts a series of robberies by writing a letter saying, give me your money. Mm. And it's all one sequence. He goes all the way back to the shop. He robs the place, goes into the shop, buys the lead, then takes it back to the girl. And then his adrenaline is just like pumping. Yeah. And then he ends up having this impromptu, unplanned sex that's just all based on pheromones, I can assume.
Yeah.
Because she was just like, he's like, there's a close fine line between confidence and crazy.
Yeah.
And she's sniffing some confidence.
Yes.
Maybe a little bit of gravy.
Yeah.
Crazy gravy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an amazing sequence. Yeah. Even though the camera's moving left and right and it's kind of combobulating, it's like, well, I love that guerrilla filmmaking. It's very claustrophobic. But again, I don't know. I still kind of feel like this would have been better served as a two-part TV drama. It doesn't feel like a movie, but that might be because it's too close to home.
Maybe.
London Stansted, all that sort of stuff, like airports. I'm just like, it feels too close to home.
Maybe. I'd be interested to get like someone that's not from the UK, specifically around the London area's standpoint on this. Mm. Because me and you are watching this film. We've seen that guy. We know what it is to work a job that you hate, the monotonous routine of it. We know that. So like you say, it hits so close to home. We've been in British airports, just the ball ache of it all, the stress of it all.
Conveyor belt.
Yeah. And so you can sympathise with this guy. And when, like you said, that sequence and basically the whole film from the 25-minute mark right until the end, it's just showing one man acting on pure adrenaline.
Mm.
Someone that's worked God knows how long at keeping everything at bay, his demons at bay, suddenly just like letting it free, let it overflow. Mm-hmm. And he's uninhibited of what's happening. He has no idea what he's going to do next. He goes in, he wants £5 to get this lead for this woman he's trying to impress. Then he ends up robbing a bank, gets a huge buzz off of it, and then decides, well, that was great. That felt really good. I'm going to fucking do that.
But he's not thinking about spending money. There's no way this guy will serve time in a normal prison.
No, no, no.
No way.
No way.
And I love that. I love that it doesn't end in a hail of bullets. I love that he's not going to go down for 20 years for armed robbery. He will go into a psych ward and it'll be like a mentalist prison.
Yeah.
To try and get him better, which I'm glad about because it's black and white. You can see he's having a mental breakdown.
Yeah.
He's not doing normal things.
Clear as day. He's not going to rob a bank for financial gain.
He might rob.
He might rob after rob.
At any point, I thought he might ever rob.
Yeah, his movements, the fluid movements, the way he was jolting his body, I was like, you're two steps away from indecent exposure, good sir.
He was getting wetty with the world.
Yeah, he was. But it's that, isn't it? He wasn't robbing the banks for financial gain. He wasn't doing it because he's like, I'm sick of not having enough money to do stuff. I'm going to rob a bank. I'm going to run away. I'm going to have money for the first time in my life. The money's secondary. It's the buzz. Mm. It's him doing something that's so out of character and having that sense of freedom and of release. He's like, I can do this. You know what? None of this fucking matters. Mm. And he just goes on a mad one. And I love it.
How brain dead and like uncultured do you have to be to work with him, and when he starts to have his meltdown at the belts, at where he's x-raying stuff, not realize that there's something actually really wrong with him, and all be going like, what's he doing, what are you doing, mate? He wouldn't be like that in a minute. I'd be like, he's probably gonna have a stroke or something's going on. He might have a tumor up in his brain or a blood clot, something's changing. I would have took him by the hand and said, it's all right, mate, and I would have walked him away and sat him down. They're all like, what's he doing? I'm like, you must be thick as shit.
Yeah,
come on now.
I think it's that conveyor belt of colleagues. They don't care because he's an outsider. He's not one of the group that are friendly. He's this other in this workplace. They don't care and they're not perceptive enough to be like you say, if I saw someone like that, I'd be like, number one, I'd be like, hey, give an ambulance a call or police a call or something. I'll go and talk to him. Like, he's unhinged. Something's about to go down here. But they don't see it because they're part of that conveyor belt as well. They're probably fighting their own demons, being depressed. Like, but at least they've got something to focus on, whether it's going out at the weekend, going out on a nice date, going on holiday. Joseph, Ben Whishaw's character's got nothing.
Yeah, some people's dreams are short, deep.
Yeah.
I liked what you mentioned earlier. It'd be nice to get some people from across the pond to get some eyes on this and see if they see it as a film, as a movie. Because obviously in England, it's too close to home for me to look at it more than like a two-part TV drama. But and for people in the UK, you can watch it on BBC iPlayer. But I don't know if in the US you could get a change of VPN or IP address and watch BBC from that way. Maybe not, because you need a TV license in the UK. But.
Yes, it's certainly a film that...
That's a service we provide.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one that's overlooked probably by a lot of people over here, and then further afield, people just probably doesn't know it even exists. Mm-hmm. So if listening to this podcast, you're like, oh, I'd like a little sniff of Surge, then I would say go and check it out.
Oh, look, we've got a listener from Djibouti.
Yeah. Any more likes for me?
Yeah, there's a piece of dialogue towards the end that I really love. So after he's had a mad night in London, and not the sort of night I would have, but he's covered in blood, he's effed up, he just goes into his mum and dad's house where it all started, essentially.
Yeah.
Takes off his clothes, goes to bed, and his mum, obviously seeing her son come to this point in his life, she's just broken. He's an only child, she loves her child, you love a child forever. And when he's in the kitchen, he's so calm now. And it's amazing. He's sort of like exercised his demons. Yeah. He's purged himself of all of the irritations and stress. And he's very calm. And it was liberating to see that. But she says a lovely line, because he's covered in blood and got a black eye. She says, this is not what a good life looks like, Joseph. And I thought that was mega. Like, his mum played, she's not in it very much. She's at the start, she's at the end. At the start, she just seems like a really depressed, cold woman. At the end, you sort of see that this has been going on a long time.
There is a warmth to her.
There is a warmth to her, yeah. And I think it doesn't help having that fucking straight dick dad that he's got.
Yeah.
It's just 101, I'm a man.
Beige boy dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't ask for help to move a washing machine, even though someone's lingering to help, then moves it and goes, too late now.
Yeah.
Oh, my dad's like that. Mm. Fuck off, dad. Jesus.
Okay.
Yeah, I enjoyed that part.
Yeah. Any more for me, or shall I slide into mine?
Why don't you just move on, man?
Yeah. All right. Well, my thing I liked most about it, well, second thing I liked most, first, obviously, the man himself, Ben, is that it's an art house anger film, really.
Mm.
Surge is a quietly menacing film that showcases one man's mental breakdown. The way the film shifts from slow and steady to fast and frantic was a clever way to depict an individual's descent into distress. And I thought the way the director sort of uses noise and movement to show this metamorphosis into madness felt like an honest depiction of a man in meltdown.
Like Franz Kafka.
Yeah.
Yeah, metamorphosis.
Yeah, the way the narrative shifts from a simmering build-up of tension to an explosive act of adrenaline was a really effective way to tell this sort of story.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I just think this couldn't be a big-budget film. This couldn't be a huge cast. I mean, there's films like that. You look at Falling Down with Michael Douglas. That looks at one man's break into madness, doesn't it? But it's still very showy.
On a grander scale.
Yeah, it's huge. It's massive. Mm. This is a very, very much a more quieter considered film set in Britain. So there's no guns. There's no huge acts of violence.
Don't take a stab at Falling Down, mate.
Oh, mate, I love Falling Down.
It was the original Breakdown film.
Yeah, this is a much more complex and realistic look at someone's breakdown.
Oh, yeah.
Like Michael Douglas, we all know Michael Douglas. We all love Michael Douglas, and he's fantastic in that film. It's one of his best performances, but there's still an element of Hollywood in it. The music, the budget, the way it's filmed, everything about it. It's more loud, it's more proud.
What I do appreciate from Falling Down, though, is that there's more exposition into why he is the way he is.
Yes.
You know he's had trouble with his wife. She finds him to be quite stern and cold. He works at a defence company, which he loses his job, so you understand it more. With Ben Whishaw, they don't explain how he got to this point. You can only assume it's just that things haven't worked out and he's of a weaker disposition mentally than most people. So, the comparison there. I love how we're comparing Falling Down to this. I'm not saying that the one's better than the other. It's just like how, like you're saying, polar opposite in terms of production and...
Yeah.
One's almost too gritty, too guerrilla, and the other one's almost too Hollywood.
Well, I'll say this. Falling Down is entertaining.
Mm.
I wouldn't say Surge is an entertaining film. No. There's parts of it that made me laugh and chuckle. There's Ben Whishaw's performance is, I guess, a form of entertainment because it's so believable and you're so completely captivated by it.
Well, it's all over the shoulder, isn't it?
It's
kind of like Saw in that sense.
Point of view, POV, right?
Yeah, the camera follows him, trails him all the time. It's a one camera film, it's one shot film. A scene never starts and he's not in the shot, which is, it's cool. It reminds me of Saw a lot. Yeah. In that regard, which is kind of a tough film. It is tough. They are tough movies to follow.
Yeah.
Because you're not being given air to breathe, the wide shot to take in other characters. It's very... That's why it's good. It's 90 minutes shorter.
Exactly. If this was 2 hours, it would be a slog, right?
Yeah.
And I think cinema is a form of entertainment first and foremost, but I do think there's a space where cinema can be an experience. You don't always have to watch a film to sit there and be like... have a huge smile plastered on your face.
Mm-hmm.
Equally, you don't have to be watching a film and be sobbing at like a romance film because the beautiful couple don't end up together, or there is a space in between where you're watching a film just to experience a facet of real life or what a mental breakdown looks like. And I think Surge fits into that perfectly. It's definitely an experience.
Yeah, you took a day on a bus to some town you've never been to before just to look at it, and you know you're going to go home at the end of it.
Yeah,
it's just that you're having a look at like what it could be like to have a breakdown.
Exactly. And you probably won't visit that town again. You've seen it once, you don't need to see it again.
Yeah, I don't think you would.
No, that's right. The final thing I liked about it was just the pacing. Now, I'm not always one for a slow burner of a film, but I thought the pacing for this one was brilliant. It doesn't take long to show us that Ben Whishaw's character Joseph is right on the edge, but it does take a while for him to get to full frenzy, and his gradual build-up of tics, troubling behaviour, and that inevitable dismount into disaster was well handled, and I thought the film was effective in the quieter moments and shocking in the louder parts. Like you say, it's a tight 90 minutes, and that's perfect. Any longer would have been too much.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought of it, but you saying it, I could definitely see this as a BBC back-to-back drama.
Mm.
one on a Saturday night, one on a Sunday night, 9 o'clock.
ITV.
Yeah, something like that, that you could just watch and be like, did you see that episode one of that thing? Yeah, watch it on catch up.
Yeah, it reminds me of like saying Stephen Graham, when he stops doing films for a year or two and he comes back to England and he does a few really gritty dramas.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, I can, now you say that, yeah, I tend to agree. I could definitely see that. It wouldn't need to be more than a two-parter. You don't need a six-episode miniseries or something like this, do you? What didn't you like about Surge?
You do not kiss your mum on the lips.
That bothered me to fuck
as well.
It was
an instant dislike.
Yeah.
You don't do it, man.
When you're a child, fine.
No, even then.
Baby.
No. Babies don't sit there and go, oh, better give mum a kiss on the lips.
Toddlers?
No, never. You don't kiss
on
the
lips. I'd have to ask my mum. I can't recall a time I've kissed my mum on the lips.
Especially when you're an adult. So you know when he had sex with the woman? He has sex with her, doesn't he? Against the counter.
Yeah.
Imagine if he'd gone down for some monge too.
Oh.
And then kissed his mum on the lips. You don't do it. Imagine she'd had a go on the old husband's rod. And then kissed him. You never do it. And your talk about toddlers and babies, I still think cheeks are best because they're all squishies and stuff.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, it's a problem, isn't it?
I can't think a problem.
I wouldn't.
You kiss your mum on the lips?
No.
When you were a toddler?
No.
You didn't?
No, not that I remember.
No? Not after sharing a powdery donut?
I don't think so. I just think I'm now just think I'm just thinking of the secondhand monge 2 on mum's mouth. Like, that would be horrific. Joseph's going through a meltdown as it is. If he kissed his mum and she was like, "Oh,
cocoa butter.
Oh, what have you been eating?" And she was like, "Muff." That would send him into much more of a mental breakdown.
Yeah,
but I must admit, it didn't make my list of dislikes, but when he did plant one on his mum, I was like, "No wonder you're mad, mate. What are you doing? You're a fully grown adult kissing your mum.
Mum, dad stopped showering in the morning.
Oh, my
God.
Okay. Got any more for me?
So I already covered, it felt more like a TV drama to me. But that again might be because it's too close to home. I want anyone that's not from England who listens to this, please try and give it a watch and let us know if you see it as a movie or more of a televisual feast. It's very depressing.
Yeah, it is.
And in my mind, if you have no children or wife, there are a million things you could do before having a mental breakdown. Get a credit card and go to Asia. See the world, right? Because at the end, he's watching these exotic dancers that are from, I don't know where, China, Nepal, wherever, somewhere out east. And he's watching them and he's enjoying it. And it's like, fucking hell, man, see? You could have just got a credit card. Yeah. When you were feeling the heat come around that corner, De Niro, when you should have just been like, I just need a fucking break. And fuck it, I don't have kids to look after. I don't have a wife who's expecting me to work every day. Just get the credit card and bugger off. Go to Thailand, see the world, calm down. But then again, I don't know if the technical part of a mental breakdown, I don't know if it was out of his control. But he knows what he likes. He knows what he doesn't like. He doesn't like loud noises. He likes peace and quiet.
Then he shouldn't be working at a fucking airport.
And no one should.
That's the problem, I think. He's stuck in this job, dead-end job, and that's all he's living for.
Yeah.
Go to the pub. If you're not a drinker, get some weed.
Airports are the worst. They're one stage away from being an abattoir for humans.
Yeah,
you can just see it now. Everyone's lining up, like, and doesn't really know what's going on. They can occasionally hear a bit of a scream up ahead. They're like, what the fuck's that? Don't know. Any water in your bag? No. I'll just put your head down here. Chop.
Yeah, I fucking hate airports, man.
I hate them, man.
But I make sure I get there 5 hours early.
Oh.
I don't know why.
Yeah, but then you have to just suffer to everyone for more time.
I fucking hate airports, man. It almost makes holidays not worth it. Because the stress I put myself through going to the airport,
oh yeah,
being at the airport, getting to the country, getting off the plane, getting my luggage.
Don't go back to the IBS. Don't go back to the IBS.
Well, now you're bringing it up.
No, don't do it.
No, I wasn't actually going to bring up the bum clapper.
You know, we obviously always talk about your fear of spiders. So it'd be a good time for me to sort of tell everyone my greatest fear is dying in a plane crash.
Yeah.
Now, I've flown a lot. I have seen a lot of the world.
Yeah, you have.
And every time I've done it, I've told myself as I get on that plane, you're going to die in a horrific plane crash, Harry. It's just, I kiss the plane. As I walk in, the stewardess is there. She sees me lean in and get some dirty monge too on that plane and go.
If I was a air steward and I saw that, I'd be like, this man is not getting on the plane. Like, what's he got planned?
Yeah.
Why is he macking the plane? What's he going
to
do?
Worst way to die, I think. That and second fear is sharks. I adore them. I think they're incredible. Terrified. If I'm in open water, I think sharks. So if I survive a plane crash and then get eaten by a shark, that is the worst day of my life.
And then if you survive the plane crash, the shark, you swim ashore to a beach, guess what's waiting for you?
Sunburn.
Spiders.
Some spiders. I think I'd be all right with the spiders. I'd eat it. I'd eat them to get my energy back.
That's disgusting.
Mm.
Yeah, I'll snuggle down in the shower with you on that one, because I think it's anxiety inducing, and that's the thing that I didn't like about it. But it's kind of weird to say that, because that's the whole film's purpose, right?
Yeah.
So it doesn't take much to set me off and get my heart in a flutter. But the use of sounds, the munching of glass, the unhinged parents, the dickhead general public, the biting of cutlery, and the overall viewing of a mental breakdown had me feeling unsettled and uneasy almost immediately.
Which I don't... A film can be excellent. It can be 10 out of 10. It's still hard to sort of settle for the fact that you're putting yourself through that.
Oh, it's like Uncut Gems.
Yeah,
it's like Good Time. It's like it's these sort of films. It's you're on edge. You can't look away. I'd say it is a form of horror because it's so realistic.
Well, it's unsettling.
I think everyone, like you said earlier, has got their breaking point. And I think that there is a frightening reality that every single one of us could end up in Joseph's shoes. To a lesser extent, a greater extent, we're all only human. We've all got our boiling point.
I've definitely been there.
Yeah, mate, me too.
I've definitely been there.
And I think, like we said earlier, it's not entertaining film. It's an experience. But it doesn't, even knowing that, it doesn't make it any easier to watch this sort of film. It's a difficult watch that could be triggering for anyone that has had a breakdown or that loves someone who has had one. So I would suggest that viewer's discretion is advised with Surge.
Mm.
It's definitely a troubling watch. Now, I've seen it 3 times, and I find great value in this film. I don't enjoy it, but I find it fascinating. It's one of my things I look for in films is the fragility of the human existence. And when a film taps into that, I find it fascinating.
I'm glad to have seen it, and I will take away from it I'm very impressed by Ben Whishaw. It shows me that he can be so much more than Q in Bond and Paddington.
Yeah.
But I'll never watch it again.
No, I mean, 3 and done for me. That's me done. I would say if you are a cinephile, if you like to watch these type of films that make you feel itchy in your own skin, then yeah, give it a go.
Mm.
Any more dislikes for me?
I think I already mentioned it. What was the catalyst for his condition? It's not established. We don't know. Especially now there's no bloody trivia on IMDb.
Yeah,
I'm all good. I'm done.
Yeah. Oh, I've got a couple more dislikes. The main one is madness is a product of our environment.
Mm.
The parents in this, man. Spineless, vanilla, energy vampires that undoubtedly contributed to Joseph's breakdown. I know it's only a film, but these sort of people are out there. They need to be held accountable for their actions. You can see it. The parents there, like the no conversation. The mum nearly having a breakdown of her own because her son walked in when she was cutting a fucking cake.
Mm.
Like the dad being so deeply agitated at everything, everyone on eggshells, them standing in the room together and not enjoying each other's company, but doing it by obligation. It was just like, oh, you see these families out there, you see these people out there, and there's no wonder that Joseph ended up the way he did. It's just so...
It's hard to be around people that lack aspiration as well, though. So like his parents seem very out of love.
Yeah.
And they just exist together because it's the easier road and it was established long ago, and it's too much of a pain in the arse to now build a new road. And I think he sees that, and it's really depressing.
I think his whole existence, that having the steady job and that steady income, that 9 to 5, that shift work, that getting the bills paid, having a roof over your head, like having your 3 meals a day, all of that is implemented by this really sort of strict family life. And I think he's not got aspirations, like you say, because all he's got from his parents is get a steady income.
Exist.
Pay your bills.
Literally just saying, yeah. Oh, exist, and this is the best way to
it. And then continue to do that until you die.
His dad's basically a prick, isn't he?
He is a prick.
Hit a guy with his car, gently, bear in mind, but just ignored it and wanted to drive off. Like, what are you doing?
You get a sense that it's generational, don't you? He's probably had the same sort of...
He doesn't want to admit that his eyesight's going, his reactions are going.
Yeah.
Because he can't be the all-enforcing daddy.
But, you're bang on the buzzer there. But then you see all of this madness ensue with Joseph's character, who's going through just a mental break.
Say that again, please.
He's disassociating.
Say ensue again. That was awesome.
Ensue.
Oh, No, but you said it was such vibrancy. You went, ensue.
Oh, thanks.
It was really good.
Oh, cheers. Sorry, carry on. I'll have to listen back to that. No, thank you. But, like, in a film where he's, like, madness is winning, like, his boiling point has reached. He's completely uninhibited. He's doing what he wants. He's letting the adrenaline kick in. In a film that's full of that, the most awkward parts of it is the meal with his fucking family.
I couldn't stand that.
And that should be a joyous moment. Going back home and having dinner, spending your birthday with your family. That should be nice.
When his mum says, Joseph, you gulp so loudly.
I mean, he does.
He does, but it's a tick.
Yeah. He's trying not to chew the fucking glass, mother.
Oh, yeah. It's, I hated that. That opening 20 minutes, it just made me feel shit.
Yeah.
I felt really, like, annoyed for him. Depressed that life is actually kind of like that. That you've got to suffer other humans and you're forced to suffer them because you're forced to live in a society and in built-up towns. You're not allowed to just go, I caveman, I build in that direction. Yeah. You're not allowed to do that. Yeah. You're controlled. Yeah. No one's free. It's an illusion. No one's free. If I was free, I would be able to go and hunt a deer right now. A poor job I would do, of course. The best I'd get is a few bat hits on its hinds and it'd still get away from me. But I'd still feel free. I'm not allowed to do that. Well, I might be able to. It depends.
It's that you're made to subscribe to a service that you never agree to.
I know. I've got no choice.
Yeah, you have to do it. Otherwise, you're looked at as a person like Joseph, like, oh, he's mad.
I look at council tax. I'm like, hold on a fucking minute. You're forcing me to pay this. But what if I don't want to use your bin service? And what if the police have, if they've never done anything for me? This should be an opt-in option. Yes, I can take my rubbish to a tip and I'll pay £2-3 to get rid of it once a week. I don't pay you council tax. And I don't need your police officers. They have done nothing for me.
You don't have a choice.
I know, but that's your freedom.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm completely agreeing with you.
It's nonsense.
It is, yeah. Should we start a rebellion?
I don't know if we have time.
Yeah, too much work to do.
Too much work, mate.
Yeah. My final dislike, Lee Evans.
What?
If you don't know, Lee Evans is a hugely popular comedian in the UK. He uses movement and facial expressions to tell his jokes, and his brand of comedy is over the top and incredibly funny.
He's not in this.
No, he's not. But the problem is, there are parts of Ben Whishaw's performance where his actions reminded me of Mr. Evans, and that took me out of the film. The way he's so over the top with his facial expressions, his movement and stuff, I couldn't help watch it. And I'm a big fan of Lee Evans, but when he's doing his comedy act, he looks like a chimp.
And he says it about himself.
Yeah, yeah. I was watching this film. The first time I saw it, I thought it's second and third. I'm watching it. And I think Ben Whishaw is magnificent in this. But there is parts. If you see it again, when he's being really sort of fluid with his body movements, I can't help but see Lee Evans, man.
I think you should add the trivia to IMDb.
I might.
Yeah. Ben Whishaw was inspired by the chimp-like actions of Lee Evans.
Yeah. And it's one of those, it's a diet dislike, but I felt like I had to include it because every time I see it, I'm like, that's Lee Evans, that's Lee Evans, that's Lee Evans. And I'd love to speak to Ben and see, like, did you watch Lee Evans before this? And did you consciously make a decision, or is this just how it happened?
I've seen nut jobs do that sort of physical dodginess.
Well, it's erratic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it'd be hard to, like, get the microscope on it and see it arm for arm.
Well, once we've finished here, I'll show you some scenes. If you can stomach watching a bit of Surge again, I'll show you the ones I'm talking about and we can have a little deep analysis side chat about it.
I've gone beyond Lee Evans now, though. I like my more crass comedians.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I do. But Lee Evans will always have a place in my heart because when I was 14, 15, he killed me.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah. I've got some questions. Ben Whishaw goes against his usual casting to play an absolute problem of a man. What's your favourite performance of an actor playing against the grain?
I might nick one of your favourites. Maybe One Hour Photo, Robin Williams. Yeah. Or when he did Good Will Hunting, actually, because even that was different from the films he was doing in the 90s, like Doubtfire and stuff. When he went and did Good Will Hunting, I realised that there's a lot more to him.
I love it when a dramatic actor shows their comedic chops or a comedic actor shows their dramatic weight.
Which way do you prefer?
I love it when a comedic actor can make me really feel. So when Robin Williams did Good Will Hunting and in Awakenings as well as another one that he did, One Hour Photo, I think when they do that and you're like, wow, you're not just a clown. Mm. There's a lot more to you. They say comedy is the hardest thing to do. So I do appreciate like really straight edge actors that are known for dramatic roles. When they go comedic, like when Leonardo DiCaprio in One
Upon a Time
in Hollywood, yeah, when he's
so funny,
which is so funny when he has that meltdown in his in his trailer. I was like, oh man, I didn't, because there's a few of Leo's films where he shows that he can be funny, but not to that extent, I don't think. So yeah, I'm there for it. When any actor goes against what they usually do, I'm right there for it.
I think Tom Cruise can be hilarious.
Well, that's one of my answers. Him in Tropic Thunder,
yeah
when he does the dancing with the big like gorilla arms.
Even Edge of Tomorrow. His reaction to dying over and over again is funny. Like he's there's always been something funny about Tom Cruise. He does make me laugh.
Well, it's funny that he's a cold blooded action star and he's like 4'10" or something. Mm. Like, that always makes me laugh. Mm. I've also got here Tom Hanks in Road to Perdition because he's never really a villain. And in Road to Perdition, he's not. He plays a bad guy, but he's a good soul, I guess, but a lot more quiet, a lot more, normally he's the good man.
I'd argue that that's just, he put his skill sets to a job to pay for, to get money. I don't think he's evil in Road to Perdition.
No.
I know he's a hitman, so he doesn't ask a lot of questions, but you can tell like, he's actually quite a cold dad in it, isn't he? That's why that's the better part of Road to Perdition.
Yeah, you're right, yeah, because he normally plays this really warm character, doesn't he?
Right.
So when he's sort of cold and clinical, it's like, oh, Tom, I didn't know you had that in you. Mm. The last one was Olivia Colman in The Favourite. Now, I know The Favourite isn't a favourite of yours, but I think her in this, she plays this sort of spoiled child vibe, and I think she's just really good in it. I think she's a fantastic actor.
I just need to sit and watch it properly. Yeah. I love Yorgos Lanthimos, but it's just sometimes, I'm sure a lot of people have this, there's a film you've always wanted to watch, you hear about it, you delay watching it, you have a little 10-minute whiff at it one day, and then the doorbell goes, and you just don't go back to it. I'd need to sit down and properly watch it.
Yeah, I like it. I reckon, if you've got the time to give it a go, I reckon.
It looks smelly. Yeah. It looks like a time of smells.
It is, it's safe to say there it was smell heavy.
Yeah, it looks like it, doesn't
it? Yeah. The second question I have, you kind of already answered it, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Mm-mm-mm.
I consider Surge to be a more grounded British version of Joker. Do you agree?
Yeah, and less fantastical.
Yeah.
And I do prefer the tamer sort of end result.
Mm.
You know, it doesn't end with a city on fire and, guns
Anarchy
and cars
wins.
Turning.
Yeah.
I kind of like that it didn't outrun itself. It didn't get too ridiculous.
It ends, he's scratched an itch, isn't he?
Yeah.
And he's like, he's relieved.
I would like to have seen where he'd gone after this breakdown. Like, maybe not in this film, maybe some sort of sequel. This is why maybe if it was a 2-3-part drama, a few years could have gone by and he could have been released from a nut house. I know that's not the PC way of saying it, but I'm going to say it. And, he's purged himself of all that. And the first thing he does is go, get that credit card. And he goes to Asia.
Yeah.
And just goes and sees the world.
And you see him healing through that.
Yeah.
Surge 2, the surgeoning.
But that's just a selfish little, I want him to win sort of thing.
Yeah, that's nice, man.
Mm.
Final question. If you completely snapped and was on the cusp of a full-blown meltdown, what film would you choose to try and calm your tits?
Ooh. Oh. Oh. Licorice Pizza.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hello.
I love that movie.
I've got more of a broad answer.
Lord of the Rings.
No.
Back to the Future.
No. Studio Ghibli. Ooh. Any one of them.
Yeah.
The colours.
They are very peaceful.
The sound, the ASMR of it. Like
Arrietty.
The fantastical elements. You can immerse yourself in those crazy worlds and stop yourself from going crazy by just absorbing the colours and the vibrancy of it all. So that's what I do.
See, I get that from Licorice Pizza, though. When you watch it again, because you will watch it again, you listen to the low undertones of the boom, boom, boom. Everything's very breezy there. It's like a warm day with a breeze.
Ooh.
And it's getting out of puberty and sort of having dreams and aspirations. It's a homage to movies and it calms me down.
Nice, man.
I agree with you, actually. Ghibli, I'd go Arrietty. I love that.
Mm.
Really cool. It's from The Borrowers, based on The Borrowers. But yeah, they're very calming. The colours are very, like, relaxing. Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah, they are. I would say they're great to combat the winter blues.
Great
stick,
choice.
Stick a Studio Ghibli on.
I love that. I'm holding a knife. I'm headbutting a wall and then I just hear Licorice Pizza start and I go, oh, okay, calm down.
I'm not going to commit mass murder now. What would you rate Surge out of 10?
7.
Okay. Yeah, I'm right there with you, mate.
Schnook.
Yeah. It's one of those films, isn't it? Not necessarily enjoyable, but certainly worth watching.
Got a review on its merits.
Yes, exactly that. That gives Surge a total score of 14 out of 20. If you like your films to be taut, tense and troubling, or if you've ever wanted to picture Paddington gorge his gob with glass, then Surge could be a film for you. Consider watching this one if you enjoyed Joker, Falling Down and Uncut Gems.
Nice.
Should we play a game?
Yeah.
The game in question is What the Plot, where the rules are simple and the results quite the opposite. Harry will conceive an original idea from his big and beautiful brain and give birth to a plot. It's then down to me to nurture this thought by providing a film title, genre, cast, and anything else I can think of to raise this brainchild into a fully functioning film concept. Over to you, Harry.
Surge might have affected my What the Plot.
Okay.
So I do apologise.
Okay.
A man thinks he's slowly turning into a toad.
The classic.
His reflection is changing, and so he starts spending time near ponds and trying to mimic a toad's life.
Ooh.
He feels drawn to it and feels like he should express this inner thing going on. But his family and friends like tell him, you're not a toad, and that he has a job.
Imagine having your family have to tell you that. Neil, sit down, you're not a toad.
You're not a toad, stop ribbiting. But yeah, he does have a daughter, he's got a wife, and they're like, no, you're not a toad, man, come on. But he doesn't believe anyone, but he tries to play along and hide his instincts to keep other people happy. He's sort of stopping his inner toad from coming out.
What a sentence.
And that despair of having to hide his feelings, oh, subtext, he disappears and they find him face down in a pond dead because he ain't a toad and he died by trying to be a toad.
Do you know what I'd love?
What, mate?
Plot twist that he is a fucking toad.
It could go that way, yeah. Like you mentioned earlier, Franz Kafka's Metamorphosis. So about the guy who wakes up as a bug and has to deal with the fact that he's now a bug in a human world.
So, does this matter?
I think him thinking he's a toad and wanting to express he's a toad.
He identifies as a toad.
Kind of like, is it Jenkins in Step Brothers? The one who goes, oh. I wake up and I'll be a dinosaur. Is it? What's his name? Richard Jenkins?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's so. Richard yeah, Jenkins. I think so. Yeah, I love that scene. But more serious. More serious. Like, all he sees is a toad in reflections
so
all the time.
Is this sort of a... is it a middle-aged man that's struggling with the fact that his metabolism is slowing down? He's getting a bit chubbier.
What, a fat film?
No, but does he identify as a toad because he sees himself less because he's changing? He's getting older.
Could be.
So is it sort of like subtext for dealing with getting older and accepting it gracefully?
I think it's subtext for not fulfilling your potential or having just being dealt a bad hand in life that you didn't get to be what you wanted to be. So it materializes into a toad, which a lot of people obviously through myth and through old fairy tales is considered an ugly thing. And you've got to kiss a toad to turn it into a prince. But he never gets his kiss.
Oh, that's sad. So it could be a film that speaks to mental health. It could be just as basic as there's a man and he thinks he's a toad.
I think it's better it's mental health than physically true. Like, I don't want it to be like Jeff Goldblum, The Fly, where he actually starts to turn into a fly.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, there's a fly man. Like, I think he sees toad.
Okay.
And it's his way of wanting to escape. It's literally Surge, but he thinks he's a toad.
So maybe he, as a kid, he had pet toads. He's always had an affiliation with toad dudes.
I don't know any kids that have pet toads. Do you have a pet? Did you have a pet toad and kiss your mum on the lips?
I had a pet toad.
Oh,
that I used
shit.
To kiss on the lips.
Is that what she used to say to you? Like, you're a toad at the moment, but you kiss me on the lips, boy, and you're going to become a prince.
Right, just for clarification, my mother did no such thing. Just to clear that up.
That's
so,
journalists.
So, can the man that thinks he's a toad, can he be called Todd? Or is that two on the nose?
No, that's good. I don't mind what he's called.
I don't know. I like the thought that he doesn't want to be Todd. He wants to be Toad.
That's cool, yeah.
Todd, not Toad.
Todd, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, Todd.
So the film, I like these sort of films because on the surface it just sounds mad. It just sounds, it could easily be taken as a comedy, but I don't see it as that. I think it looks into, it taps into someone who's struggling with their own identity, maybe struggling with the fact that they're getting older, maybe struggling with the fact that they no longer see themselves as young and youthful. Maybe he's got such low self-esteem that he sees himself as a toad.
Could
maybe
be like body dysmorphia as well.
Maybe him and his wife are disconnected, but they don't split up because of their kids or whatever, and he values himself less and less. Maybe his wife is a bit of a battle axe and it just makes him feel really shit.
Or maybe with his mental break, like his wife in a world of normal people becomes animated. And she's like a princess from like Disney. And because he's the toad, he doesn't get the kiss off her. I'm not talking this is an animation. I'm saying one aspect of it is like he's seeing her in that light. Well, I'm the toad. I've lost my looks and charm just because of genetics. I've lost my hair. I've got a beer belly. You still look quite good.
Yeah.
And he's like putting her on a pedestal.
So,
yeah, it's changed a lot.
It hasn't. I think a film like this, on the surface, it just sounds like it could be a crazy offbeat comedy. But then you look at it more and it's like, well, it's actually quite deep. It's a lot deeper than that. And I like that.
Like Palm Springs. Is it Palm Springs?
Where it's the Andy Samberg.
Yeah, so it's a comedy, but it is kind of sad and serious.
Well, I would say they would have comedic elements in it. I wouldn't say it's an out and out comedy like I'd suggest Palm Springs is.
Stark comedy.
More so, it's I'd see directing this is Yorgos Lanthimos. You brought him up earlier, but he's got that brand of like odd narrative with humor that's very unique to him. In his dialogue is very robotic, almost not human.
Dogtooth.
Yes. Dogtooth, the lobster, killing of a sacred deer,
yes, you've smashed it.
You could see him in this sort of film. And in the role of Todd, I think I'd go Paul Walter Hauser. Not because he's more of a heavy set gentleman.
Yeah, right.
Nothing. No, I just think he could play this sort of role really well. He's great. And I think he's got a bright future ahead of him. He's in Richard's Jewel, I, Tonya.
He's rumoured for Tarantula.
Yes. Yeah, he's heavily linked with Tarantino's final film. And as his wife, I'd have Tilda Swinton. They're like polar opposites, and she could be this cold, sort of stern wife that has grown apart from Paul Walter Hauser's character, Todd. And I think that would be an interesting dynamic because you wouldn't pair them two together. And well, I think that would work in a Lanthimos film.
She strikes me as an evil stepmum rather than a princess, but life's realistic. And I think it'd be cool if in comparison to Paul Walter Hauser, she's quite tall.
Yeah.
She's probably taller than him.
Yeah, so she's almost been on this pedestal in their whole relationship, and he feels lesser as he's got older, almost toad-like. So he feels like he's pond life now. So a Yorgos Lanthimos film starring Paul Walter Hauser in the lead. His wife is Tilda Swinton. And I'd call the film Ribbit.
Todd, what on earth are you doing?
Nothing. I'm just putting my socks on.
No, you're not. You're toading again, aren't you?
I am a toad. The sooner you accept this, the sooner we can go on with our lives.
Todd, you're a 45-year-old butcher.
From Yorgos Lanthimos, director of Dogtooth, The Lobster, and The Favourite.
Where are you going now?
To the pond.
Why?
To be with my real family. They understand me.
Ribbit, coming soon to a cinema near you.